Hi there, I'm Haley.
And I'm Johnny.
And you're listening to Johnny Haley Day of Fun.
Who do we have on today?
I don't know. Let's dive in and find out. Well, welcome everyone. This episode, I'm joined by Johnny to help me co-host, and we have Rick Warner from Phantom Detectives episode of No Small Stories, but here today to talk about ERC, the Extraterrestrial Research Center. Hello, Rick. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, how are you? How's everybody doing?
Doing well. We're here to talk about some of my favorite things. I love talking about aliens and all the things that go along with it. So let's get rolling into it. Tell us about ERC.
Okay, so ERC stands for Extraterrestrial Research Center, and I am the executive director. I'm also the director of investigations, and it's basically, well, how it all got started was, so when I started working as a paranormal investigator, that's the other thing I do. When I started working as a field investigator, investigating extraterrestrial cases, you know, I would like watch on TV, you know, like all these programs about UAPs, UFOs, you know, ufology subject matter. And, you know, I'm watching this show and then I'm seeing these guys walking around and it says MUFON. So I'm like, what the heck is that?
Who is, you know, MUFON? So, tell me.
Yeah. So I type it in, right? And all of a sudden I'm looking online and I go, oh, okay, that's what it is. So it stands for Mutual UFO Network. And then the next thing led to the next thing. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, I started looking at the website and then there was a place to, join a local chapter. Mm-hmm. So I joined a local chapter for the state of Delaware. Delaware is kind of a small state, but, you know, they were doing the meetings in the library. It's like once a month kind of thing. So I thought I'm going to go down to the library, check it out and see how I like everything. And, they had like a, you know, projector to show movies and stuff provided by the library and all that. So people would kind of get up and talk about.
Did we get to see some fun footage those are some of my favorites when you get the footage that people have of various unusual things in the sky.
Well, yeah. What they were doing is, yeah, they were actually, you know, playing some movies and stuff like that the director, the state director for Delaware had signed up for through MUFON. You know, they could play like different types of, you know, movies and things, you know, documentaries. I'd say really movies, but like documentaries and that kind of thing about the UFO subject matter. And as soon as I was a part of that, I thought, you know, I could really get into this, you know, and I was excited about it. And it wasn't that long ago, you know, I mean, well, I didn't say it. Right after that happened, I mean, I got really excited and I thought, you know what, like, you know, what could I do to volunteer to help and, you know, make a difference? And so I started out by reading how many sightings were, you know, I was highlighting that, you know, what state throughout the United States.
Gotta do your research.
The biggest amount of sighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Patterns. Like, you know, which state, like, you know, Pennsylvania had this many sightings. New York had this many sightings. New Jersey had this. Mm-hmm. So it would show you like all the hot spots. Like California is a hot spot. New York's a hot spot. New Jersey.
Well, when you have concentrations of more people, there's more opportunity. To
yeah.
Right. So
exactly. And then I
probably
thought, you know,
don't have a whole lot of them coming from South Dakota or North Dakota where John and I are at. Right.
I mean, they're out there.
Well, yeah.
They got me, right?
Oh, there's some.
Yeah, sure. You know, you get some here and there. It's hard to memorize all the places. So I just kind of kept in mind the places that were getting the most sightings. And I thought to myself one time, I kind of said jokingly, I guess the aliens don't like us very much because we're not getting as many sightings.
Yeah, they don't come hang out with us. We're not as cool.
Yeah,
we're not the party kids like California.
Exactly.
Right.
So when I see California getting all these sightings, and then I thought about, you know what, I'm from California. Now everything's tying together because, you know, I'm remembering you know, one of my sightings that I've seen as a child. And also,
yeah, and you mentioned that when we were talking with Phantom Detectives Group. So tell us about that. Yeah. You had a sighting when you were young.
Well, okay. So, I was actually in the back seat.
Mm-hmm.
And, my mom's friend was driving the car. She was next to him. And I was in the city of Garden Grove, California, by I think the freeway was called the 22 or something. It ran east and west. And there's this overpass, and we're like going towards it. And they're kind of like talking to each other, not really, barely paying attention to the road in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I blame the driver more for that. But so they're talking back and forth. And then all of a sudden, I see what appears to be this saucer-shaped object that flew overhead. And I got a quick glimpse of it. And then all of a sudden, in a few seconds, the thing went away really fast,
yeah,
at incredible speed, and it was gone. So everything happened like really, really quick. So I asked them, "Did you just see that?" And they're like, "See what?" And they didn't see anything because they weren't really
paying attention,
sitting in the back seat, paying attention, looking up where I was. And so I was afraid to talk about it at school, thinking that I would be ridiculed by some of the kids.
When it comes to like the, you know, it seems like anymore UFOs to people are just sort of, okay, well, you know, we've been through so many other things.
Yeah. We're
super phased by all the, you know, government disclosure kind of items that come out and what have you. So it's
exactly, it's
definitely something that people are a lot more willing to talk about and investigate and explore than
getting back to California, I mean, like, you know, it's not so much when I was growing up as a kid, but like, when I left California, Southern California, actually, and it was probably about 9 years ago, I moved out of that state. And so, but I would drive along these roads, these hilly roads, and there's times that I would see objects flying in the sky that didn't appear like a man-made craft. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be like a bunch of them flying together, but every now and then I'd see some like, oh man, that just doesn't look like a helicopter, a passenger jet, or,
right,
you know, a small engine aircraft. And I wasn't a field investigator back then. I wasn't investigating, extraterrestrial craft or, you know, any cases involving UFOs. But after I got into, signed up with MUFON, you know, like I said, I went to the chapter meeting and met a few people and I liked it. And I really started taking charge of things because I'm the kind of guy that, like, I don't like to just stand around and watch everybody, see how they're going to do what.
You want to get hands on and get in there?
I just get in there and I'm ready to go to work. I mean, I just come in. And I'm like, okay, let's make this happen. Let's get some stuff done. Let's start investigating cases. And then I got asked to go to the training to be a field investigator. And I remember, you know, they don't pay for it though, because the whole organization's volunteer. There's probably only two people through MUFON that get paid. I think one is the executive director for, you know, the whole United States. Well, it's not just the United States, but they're also in different countries and that kind of thing. And so each state has a chapter and they have a state director and a state assistant director and a chief for that state. So there's different positions. And I remember getting this big giant book and then you got to study and read all the stuff, but I loved it. I loved going through and doing it. And then I signed up on MUFON University. Well, they have like these classes you can take
And I think a lot of, like, because I'm pretty familiar with, maybe not everybody is, like, obviously with MUFON, but like I'm familiar with, just from a lot of the podcasts and things that I listen to, various things, but like, I know that they go through kind of, you know, gathering evidence and data and interviewing people and things like
that.
But so like for you then, how do you, like, how do cases come to you? Do you like meet people? I mean, I know you have your website so people can contact you, but like,
I'll just say this. Okay. So, and this is how, you know, cause basically a lot of stuff I do now as an executive director for my own organization. So when I was with MUFON and everything, you know, I want to say that even though I don't agree with the way they completely run things, the training they give you is awesome. It's excellent. You know, I couldn't expect more than the great training that I had, and they train you really well. So, you know, one of the big things they put emphasis on the training is, and you almost feel like you're training to be like a detective, right? Because
it's a lot of the similar, because you are investigating, you want to put together a reasonable portfolio of information.
So the way they do it is that to protect the person that you're interviewing, okay, you don't refer to them by their first and last name. You refer to them as the witness, or if they want to use their first name, you know, first initial, last initial, like use that. I mean, some people like really want their name out there because they're, you know, they're trying to promote themselves and that kind of thing. But you know,
automatically
we try not to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and you learn the proper way.
With this kind of work as a phantom detective, so I'm sure you get a lot of those kind of things coming in where, you know.
Yeah.
There's somebody who has to learn
when you're interviewing people. So you have to be able to, you don't make the interview all about what you think is really the right thing to say. So what you're doing is you're going through and asking them a series of questions, and then you let them tell their narrative. Like, what did you experience about your sighting? What were you doing before the event took place? And you're asking a lot of questions because what you're trying to determine now is credibility. Does this witness sound like they're being credible? So if they start saying one thing and turning around and saying something else, or let's say they're telling you that, well, you're asking them about their eyesight, how their eyes are and all that kind of thing. You're asking that because you want to see, well, how good is your vision? Because if you have vision problems, maybe something that you saw that looked a little blurry in the sky wasn't an extraterrestrial craft or even a man-made craft, but maybe it was just a vision problem. So you ask questions like that. And as an example, like, let's say I did a phone interview when I was with MUFON once, where it was a couple, a young couple, and they were talking about their experience, and it's kind of started out like, well, we were in the backyard shooting pool with some friends, and we had a bunch of beers, and we were kind of getting drunk and drinking up and all that kind of thing. And so that doesn't add a lot of credibility to what you said you saw. So everything has to be, you have to look at the whole kind of thing.
Right.
But you never want to just take everybody's word for it. So if they say, well, I saw this or this happened, you don't want to say, okay, well, that's definitely an alien, or that's definitely,
Right. You can't just be all in on everything that everybody
says.
Yeah.
You can't say, okay, that's an extraterrestrial craft, or, you know, that's a reptilian alien species that you saw in your backyard or whatever it is. You just can't.
Oh,
like,
please
start
do send
them.
A reptilian alien species to right. hang out in my backyard. Yeah. I would. Oh.
So you have to be able to ask people questions, and you want to determine that they're being consistent with their answers. So
yeah,
now
absolutely.
I do the same thing with my organization now, ERC, which I'm executive director, but I just want to throw this out there. So, because I have people ask me this question, if I want to be like the MUFON organization, I have no desire to be anything like that organization. Number one, you know, they probably have close to 1,000 volunteers, and it took them a long time to get where they're at. They're in all these different states. That's not what I'm trying to do. So my website, ERC Extraterrestrial Research Center, is basically a place for people to come to gain knowledge and learn about the ufology subject matter. And there's like, you know, glossary of terms there that they could go through and learn different acronyms and definitions of things. There's videos that they can watch about the subject. There's a section that talks about, you know, certain things that they're working on and research, and just a lot of really cool stuff. So, and then there's there one area where people that want to submit a sighting, if they have, you know, there's first it just started out with, if you have a sighting, like let's say you think maybe you saw an extraterrestrial being in your backyard, mm-hmm. you can fill out an online form and fill out all the information on the form. And then that comes to me. Or let's say maybe you think that you're an experiencer, where you feel maybe that something happened to you, what makes you feel that you could have possibly been abducted or that kind of thing. Then there's another form separate that they could fill out for that. So they'll choose like what button they want to hit based on what they experience and what they want to report. But one of the things they do now is I only accept cases where people have either video evidence or photographic evidence. Because sure. there's a lot of people that'll say, okay, well, I saw this and this and that. And, you know, as a UFO field investigator, we don't just automatically agree with everything everybody says. That's why we have the investigation. Because we're looking for the facts. We're investigating, putting the data together to come to a intelligent conclusion of what we feel is going on with their case.
And, well, and it is, I mean, anymore, we live in such a technological age. It's like a lot of people are, you know, who doesn't have a cell phone on them, at least in our Western world neck of the woods, right? Everybody's got a cell phone and they can pop things out and snap pictures. And I know there's been like, you know, sightings in Florida or like that Las Vegas incident that happened last year where the police were called because something was in someone's backyard kind of thing. So
yeah.
Whereas, I mean, you do want to have that photographic evidence, but then at the same time you have, again, the day and age of technology and AI and all those things that we have available now. Like you also have to be able to kind of determine, is this something that's real or has been doctored?
Right. That it's been photoshopped or so that kind of thing.
Do you have any
There is some software out there. There's some software out there. Like I don't have access to some of the advanced software, but there's people out there that, well, especially I know Movement has, where they can analyze the video and they could, just like I saw one, they were showing on the Bigfoot thing, and then, you know, they're measuring about like, this is how high this Bigfoot or reported Bigfoot should be, or, you know, what it's measuring according to the video and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so they'll look for, you know, inconsistencies and that kind of thing. And there's a website you can go to. Well, I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but you can put a photo in there to try to analyze it to see if any of those pixels were manipulated to try to make it look like something was there. And that brings me to the old photograph I've seen, actually a couple of them, where it shows, and people forgive me for mentioning the name, you know, Hitler, but it shows Hitler with a alien. It looked like one of the gray alien species. And they're kind of like, it's kind of funny, actually, because they're kind of like Jason's hands almost. And it looks so real, right?
Yeah, very but kind then, of like Men in Black, was it? I don't know, like Eisenhower exactly, or whoever because, they said was hanging out with the tall whites.
And because the photo looks old and that kind of thing, you're looking at it and you're thinking, huh, this looks really real. And I even thought that it was kind of real until someone posted that a picture of what it was. Hitler was there.
What the original actual photo was.
Yeah. And then someone just added an alien in there, did a darn good job. It made it look like it was the actual alien. And I'm like, oh, wow. I go, that one got me. So you really got to be careful out there, you know, what what you see that people have online, no doubt about it. But what I think people need to do is when you're looking at this stuff, rather than just say, look at one video and say, okay, well, that's not an extraterrestrial spacecraft, or that's not an extraterrestrial being, or this one says it is that, you know, look at the overall picture, look at everything that's in front of you, everything that you see, everything that's out there. So I always tell people that when it comes to things extraterrestrial, so 75% to 80% of that can be explained by a star, a planet. It could be a man-made craft,
satellites, things like that.
Yeah, things like that. So, with that being said, if that's 75-80%, so that still leaves you 25-20% of things that have been investigated that can't be determined as the main man-made object or a planet or a star or something like that, right?
So that's where some of the fun is, right? Like, that's what's always kind of fun to me too, is that, like, if even 10% of the things that people think they see are truly, like, extraterrestrial.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it's still a lot, because if you're talking about every state throughout the United States, and then you're talking about the countries and things like that. And I should mention that. So even though some of the countries that are connected to MUFON, there's some of the countries out there that might just give them a little bit of, well, this is what we saw, and you know, I work with MUFON kind of thing. But that's a lot of times they just investigate their own cases. A lot of times.
Well, it's kind of interesting to me, like, just the idea of, you know, like, something like cultures or tribes in remote areas of the world that are not, you know, what we would call, quote unquote, civilized, right? They're not technologically advanced, right? But, and they're maybe not necessarily, I guess my part of what I wonder is, you know, if you're in a remote rural area in somewhere in Africa or something, like, do they see things like that all the time and not think anything of it because they're, like, used to it? They're not, like, we, I think, as a Western culture, obviously, we're so, like, into our technology and we have all the light pollution and all these things that, like, it is such an unusual thing if you see something in the sky that you can't explain, right? But yeah, then into, like, areas of the world where you don't have that sort of amount of, again, technology, do they see things on a regular basis and it's just not reported or mentioned because they're like, well, we see those things all the time, we don't care, you know?
Well, exactly, because think about this. Like, let's say, for an example, you know, you have a high position on your job and you see something and you're dying to tell your coworkers or even your superiors, but you don't say anything because you're thinking, like, you know, well, this might affect my job, or they're going to think
people
I'm crazy,
think, yeah,
to find a way to get rid of me, to fire me, right? Or something like that. So then you have the people that have the fears about that. Then you have the people that have the fears about, well, they don't want to tell their friends and family because they don't want them to think, like, you know, something that maybe they're crazy, or, you know, oh yeah, you're just seeing things, or you're lying and you're making things up. So you have that kind of stuff. And then you have people that see things in certain countries where they're in really poor areas. Maybe they're living around mountains and things where they're living out of, you know, some little clay huts or bamboo huts or what have you. And they're just kind of struggling and they don't have TVs and phones, no cell phones, no regular telephones.
They don't have the same sort of, I guess you would say, maybe even just like culture around.
Yeah, no line of communication because they're so poor, you know?
Well, and I don't know. That's an interesting thought for me. I mean, not that they, because I just wonder, like, what are their thoughts on it? Or do they think about things like that, you know? Or do they just sort of, like, let that go as a, well, that's just a thing that happens?
Well, you gotta consider,
that's like, a good question, actually, you know?
You gotta consider, like, ancient wall art and stuff like that. There's evidence of them, you know, looking at people that someone, like, ancient aliens.
No, I was gonna say, like, or Graham Hancock's work he does on, like, cave art and things like that.
Like, Sumerian texts and stuff like that.
Right, like, very old, ancient, like, things that, it could absolutely be, they saw something strange in the sky. And so, you know, the idea that it's been around for a very long time and been recorded for a very long time and noticed, right?
Yep.
Right, right. And I'll tell you another thing, like, okay, so, because I'm also the USA ambassador for FUI, the Italian UFO Federation, and I don't really investigate cases with them, but I'm rather, they appointed me ambassador for the United States. But basically what I do is like share information with them. And, I sent them a couple articles that I wrote that they published on their website and that kind of thing. But it was a little difficult at first because, this guy found me on LinkedIn and he wrote to me in Italian. And
so I had to translate it first.
Well, the only thing he said was, like, in English was maybe hi or hello or something like that. So what I did is I copied and pasted everything that he typed to me or messaged to me on LinkedIn. And then I copied everything and then I put it through Google Translate Italian to English. And then I said, oh, okay, I see what he's talking about and all that. So then I'm going to write back to him, right? But I don't speak Italian. So then
so now
I'm thinking,
you have to love the lots and translation things that could happen when you're trying to have conversations about UFOs and things that are, you know,
not necessarily
in the mainstream of conversation. But again, more than it used to be. So I'm sure easier to communicate. And obviously with the technology we have now too, like you can communicate globally about these things and it's easier than it ever has been. So it's a lot more exciting. So,
yeah. Well, like I had to like take everything that I wrote, put it through Google Translate to Italian and then email it back to him. And I go, you know, I hope we don't. And I thought, man, this is going to take a while going back and forth. So it's very cool that you get
to be an ambassador and still, because that's a information sharing at least, right? And again, you get to experience the sort of cultural difference of how they view those cases or the kind of things that they see or experience. Like what are the again, finding the patterns, right? Like is there a pattern similar that you can kind of like find threads that are the same as what you are going through or finding in your cases here.
I mean, most definitely, you know, and it's always nice to hear cases from other countries, like, you know, what they're seeing out there. And I remember just recently, and I'm trying to remember what country it was, but the pilots were reporting sightings in the sky and had video footage and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's really credible when you get like pilots and things or
people who are familiar with
picking up things. As a matter of fact, so it's kind of a known thing that so some of the astronauts had experienced sightings of extraterrestrial craft. They were told by NASA you're not supposed to talk about anything. Don't talk about it.
There are a lot more, I don't know if whistleblowers is the right way to say it, because there is the disclosure kind of things coming out, but then you always have to wonder, like, how much information are you still not getting kind of thing? But, like, so I don't know, and you're probably familiar with, like, Dr. Stephen Greer and the CE5, like, meditation.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, and so like he's got a lot of that, the footage that they have of like CE5 interactions, right? Or like whistleblowers from the government.
Yeah, well, like I don't know, like I remember, like I don't know if you saw my, so the music video that I put together, which is really just an animation with music, And so that's really a cool case. Because and how I met this guy goes by the name of Marky Z. That's kind of his nickname. He's Mark, his first name. But anyway, that's okay to mention his name now at this point because, you know, we're good friends and all that kind of thing. And, you know, he wants to get the word out there about his sighting, what happened. So he wrote a song based on a CE5 experience case. So what he did was he was with a group of people and they were doing the CE5 using the app that was from Dr. Stephen Greer that you mentioned, mm-hmm. and where groups of people can go out to different locations and they become a member of this thing and they have this app that's like on their cell phone. And the app will play crop circle sounds or different types of music. And what some people do is they'll amplify those sounds. And the whole idea is, so CE5 is basically Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. So that's actually trying to communicate with extraterrestrial beings.
Right. They do the meditations basically to try to, to draw them in, to bring them in, say, hey, we're here. Come say hello.
And,
we're not all violent. We're not all trying to blow you out of the sky. Some of us just want to say hi and see what's up.
So the case I investigated with this guy who sent me the video footage, I go, wow, this is really good stuff. And there was a group of people, and this was in Pennsylvania, actual Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, which is close to Philly. And they're outside at night and they're laying in these kind of like real comfortable chairs that can lay back almost like a pool lounge chair type of thing. Mm-hmm. And they have their lasers on, right? Even though they're using lasers, they're not like trying to blind any pilots or anything like that. Because they all know better than doing that.
Right.
And you can get in big trouble for that anyway. So what they're doing is there anybody who sees something, they're just using their laser beam and they'll point in the night sky where
you're seeing something.
They think they're seeing something, right?
Sure.
So all these people are pointing the lasers and you could see, it was really cool. There's these triangular shaped objects and I'm analyzing the video. So at one point you see this triangle rotating like this. Okay.
Kind of like a pyramid shape, right?
The pyramid
crafts that they talk about.
So it's rotating like this forward and back and going this way. And then all of a sudden, then it's rotating horizontally going this way, like a clock. So it's going like from 12 to 9 to 6. So it's rotating in different positions on this axis. And you would see it go into the clouds and come out of the clouds. And you could see like three dots from the triangle. So I knew right away that that's not a man-made craft because we don't have a man-made craft that will fly in that pattern. There was no heat signature. There was no,
For what we are aware of publicly, like we don't know of any like crafts that are put together that way either in terms of,
exactly.
Like, our propulsion systems don't support that kind of like shape of craft.
Yeah, and so if it was a passenger plane, I mean, you know, based on you know the pattern of lights and where they were, you'd be able to see if they were actually moving away from you or they were going towards you. And if it was a single engine airplane, you'd be able to identify it. It wouldn't be flying like a triangle. If it was a helicopter, it wouldn't be, you know, same thing, wouldn't be rotating like a triangle going in the clouds and then coming out. So all these people were, you know, like you say, they were doing the meditation thing, using these special sounds and trying to invite any extraterrestrial beings to come out and pay them a visit. Mm-hmm. And some people, they'll do it and nothing happens. And other people, like in these people's case, where they actually got alien communication, which was really cool. And so interviewing both witnesses, I found both of them to be very credible. And viewing the video footage, I also found to be very credible. And that's how this musician who sent me the video wrote a song called Lights in the Sky, which was based on his
experience. Yeah.
And then later on down the road, I wrote my own song based on people that have experienced alien abduction. So, then I wrote the alien abduction song, and I actually wrote it within 45 minutes. I wrote the song. And the weird thing was, I've never written a song before. I used to write some poems in the past, but never really wrote a song. And it was almost like something extraterrestrial,
it's channeling, right?
Channeling through me, receiving
the information.
Yeah, because it was coming to me really fast. And I go, wow, this is weird. And then like all of a sudden I'm looking at the clock and I'm thinking, man, I wrote this whole thing out in 45 minutes. And I sent it to my friend who composes music. And I said, hey, can you write the music for this? And he said, yeah. So he wrote the music. Some other guy did the engineering for it and put it all together. And I listened to it. And I said, can we add some special effects and different things to it? And they did. And I said, yeah, that's great. So that's how we came up with that video that I sent you.
Yep.
Did you see the little, animation?
The alien abduction video. Yeah, song. That's really, so is there anything that what you're working on? Because you do like to do this as like sharing information. Do you do any, I don't know if I want to say outreach. That's not really the way that I suppose I mean it. But, you know, what are some of the things that you do with your website in terms of kind of like information sharing? Or are you just kind of like connecting with people, or is there anything you do networking wise to kind of get more information cases?
I've had some people reach out to me on LinkedIn. I used to be on Facebook a long time ago, and then I kind of had to
we're all kind of shifting away from social media.
Probably reason why I got off Facebook a long time ago, because it's kind of like every time I was, at the time when I was on there, you know, I was doing glamour photography and all that kind of stuff. And then I'd be like, okay, well, then I'm dating some girl who's like, well, who's this? Who are these girls? Who are, they're like pissed off and that kind of thing. Oh, they're just friends of mine, you know? And so it was getting complicated, and there was like, jealous ex-girlfriends or just different people.
Well, that's just part of this human life, right? Yeah. Those things happen.
Yeah. So I just thought, I'm just going to close down my Facebook thing and not even do, and that's kind of like what I ended up doing. But so I don't really go on Facebook anymore, but I really like LinkedIn better because it's like more for professionals and more business-like and that kind of thing. So I like that much better. And a few people had wanted to make connections with me and talk about their experience, maybe things they saw or whatever. And then I'll refer them over to my website. So I've actually gotten a few cases from being on LinkedIn, and then I drove them to my website. Well, here you can, or I'd send them a direct link where they can go in and fill out a sighting report and do all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's kind of worked out good.
Have you had, I would love to see that footage. I don't know how much Marky Z would be willing to like share that or anything. The footage that they got, like that sounds really cool.
He'll he's excited to get the word out there.
Yeah.
Because he loves the subject matter himself, and he'll be more than happy to, I could speak for him because I know how he thinks, and I know he'll do that, but he'll share the video with you, no problem.
That would be really cool to see.
He's on next week, right?
Yeah, we were going to talk to him about his music and stuff, but I would definitely have to ask him about that too, because that's really. But do you have any other sort of? I don't know if favorite is the right way to say it, but more sort of compelling cases that you have had or seen or dealt with, or things that might have a similar situation.
Let me tell you about this case. So this wasn't actually one of my cases with ERC, and you know, maybe let me back up a little bit too, because I just want to tell you how I went from being a certified field investigator to having my own organization with ERC. So I'll just give you kind of the short version here. But so when I got my certification on his investigating cases with some other investigators, and there really wasn't a lot of us, there were probably more people that just wanted to come in and go to the monthly meeting once a month, that kind of stuff. So the state director wasn't happy with some of the things that was going on with MUFON and that kind of thing. So he decided that he wanted to, you know, quit, you know, back out. And I don't want to go into detail why that is really, but we all backed him up because we thought, well, you know, what they were doing to this guy who had been with MUFON forever since the very beginning, he really wasn't being treated fairly. And so we thought, you know what, we don't really feel like we want to be a part of an organization that wasn't treating the state director right. So we all kind of backed him up, and then we thought, you know what, maybe we'll just go our own way and start our own thing. So we were all kind of like co-founders, but then the people that wanted to join the organization with myself, I'm the one who built all the website and did all the work and put everything together. And then the other people that were like wanting to be a part of it, you know, one person just said, no, I just don't want to, I don't really want to do this or think it's going to go anywhere or do anything. So that person backed out, and then another person backed out that was a part of it, and then another one. So the three people that were going to be a part of the organization said that, you know, they were just going to back out of it. So, and there's only one person who wasn't a field investigator on the end, but he was really good at researching. And he said, well, you know, I want to stay on board and do this. And I said, okay, that's great. You know, we'll do that. So he's a co-founder, you know, so.
Well, you got to have the research element too, right? Like not everybody's a people person. So sometimes somebody's got to be the one to be on the computer and get me info.
So I'm the kind of person, I said, you know what? I mean, I'm not going to quit this just because other people are going to do that. That's fine. But you know what? When I really believe in something, I stick through it to the end, man. I'm going to take the bull by the horns. I'm going to run with it. And I'm going to make this happen. I will make this happen. And even if they don't want to do it, you know, that's fine. But I said, I'm going to do it. And then, so, you know, that.
Well, that's what's important is to be passionate about what you like.
Yeah.
Just follow the things that you feel. Not everybody's going to come on the director. Train with you.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I, you know, I have the title of executive director. So, yeah, you know, some people might think, oh, well, you know, you just appointed yourself. Well, yeah, I did. But so what?
Well,
so what? Because if there's nobody there to appoint me, then I can appoint myself, right?
It's like I say, if you're not finding the right place where you sit, sometimes you just have to create your own thing and create your own environment, your own thing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So let's say you start a business, okay, by yourself. And that business starts to grow and it becomes big. And next thing you know, you have warehouses and you have employees and all that. Okay. So you're still the top dog, right? Because you're the one who started all that.
So right. Somebody's going to take on
the
big label.
Whatever it's going to be. Yeah.
Everybody's got to start somewhere. That's for sure. Not Johnny and I know that, right? Like, yeah.
Absolutely.
Exactly where we are. That's just how you got to do.
Yeah.
Very cool.
But anyway, so getting back to this case, so you asked me about a case.
Yeah.
The most compelling case, I say maybe not really so much the most compelling, but the very most interesting case, I will say, is it was supposed to be a class 3 case. This was when I was with MUFON. And I got, you know, the state director, the chief investigator and all that, they sent me this case, this high level case to investigate it with someone else. And this class level three case was sent by a lady who is, you know, retired military. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this was out by Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. And apparently I'm told it's where fallen soldiers and stuff that had passed away in combat or what have you, the Air Force flies their bodies to this base, right? And she was with them. She was like, I had a high up position with this branch of the military, this Air Force. And one of the things she reported was that, so on a rainy day, she was walking her little dog. It was a cloudy, rainy day. And there on, this is along a residential street. She's walking along the sidewalk, right? And across the street are just another group of houses. So she's walking on this concrete walkway and there's this man-made pond. Okay. And she sees all these ducks that are like walking together, lined up, and they're in front of this pond. So she thought this would be really cool to take a picture of this, right?
Yeah, sure.
So she takes a picture, and as she's taking a picture, she takes a couple snapshots, and she noticed that her dog is like barking,
yeah,
and really scared. Okay, so, but she's thinking, okay, well, maybe like, you know,
they're barking at the barking duck.
At yeah. the ducks and that kind of thing, right? I mean, that's the first thing she should have looked at. But then what happened was she's walking her dog and her dog didn't want to leave right away. So she had to kind of pull her dog and then get back to her place. And then she's looking at the photograph and she says, oh my gosh. She thinks she's seen or reports that she's seen a giant reptilian.
In the photo?
Yeah. In the photo, a giant reptilian that's on the other side of the pond. And also next to that, close by, was a large extraterrestrial craft. Okay. Well, at least that's what she thought at the time.
Right.
So what we do, the first thing is that, you know, we look at the photograph, right? And so I took the photograph and I'm looking at it and analyze it. And when I analyzed it, first thing I did is I enlarged the photograph to get a better look at it. And then I look at it and I'm thinking, okay, well, at the very top, you know, I go, is that like the, you know, we're thinking maybe that's the eyes of,
yeah, you kind of have to look at it and see, like, can you make it? Because your body sometimes plays tricks on you when you're looking at something. Like, it happens to me all the time.
So we think we're seeing this. So it looks like, at this point,
you think you see something, but then you're like, oh, no, that's.
Yeah, it's looking like a tree. And at the very top of the tree, right, you see these, like, two eye-looking things. And we're thinking maybe it's a bear or something like that. So what we have to do now is, because it's a class three case, we have to go there in person and do a whole field investigation there. And we're prepared to take soil samples and we're checking for radiation and we're doing all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I called the local police department there and let them know that we're going to be heading out there and we're going to be conducting an investigation. And to make sure, is it okay if we do that? They're okay that we can do that. So I go out there and I meet the chief investigator and we drove across in the car around the lake to go to where this tree was. So we're, you know, he's taking this measurement of the tree using this special instrument and things. He's taking the measurement of it. And we look at the photograph and compare it. And we said, well, that's a tree, right? Where she's saying this is a reptilian being. So at first glance, you might look at it and say, yeah, you know, from far away in the picture, that could maybe look like a giant reptilian, right? Mm-hmm. But then you, when you get there in person, you could see that, you know, based on what she said and what she's claiming, there's no way that that was a reptilian being, that it's actually a tree. And the next thing we did, so we go to—
I mean, isn't that around. Just such a bummer, though, when you find out that you think you see a reptilian and it's just
a tree. Because I'm thinking, man, I'd love to see an action. If it was a reptilian there, that would be great. But, you know, realistically looking at it, I knew that wasn't going to happen. But we have to go through and you know, do a thorough investigation. So I said, well, let's go to where the tree's at, and I want to see if there's any sign of any claw markings from a bear climbing up a tree. So we looked up to see if there were any bear sightings in the area or anything like that, and what the history was of any bear sightings in this area. We couldn't come up with anything. And how did it have actually been a bear that climbed up the tree? The bark would have been taken off, because the tree had bark on it, and I could very, very easily peel it off my finger. And when I peeled off a piece of bark, I could see some light fleshy color underneath the bark, and had a bear climbed on that, its weight would have pulled off some pieces. There wasn't any pieces of missing bark. And there was no sign of any kind of like animal hair or anything like that we could find. So there was no bear. But now here's the other thing. So now, okay, now what you're thinking, like, looked like eyes in the picture wasn't eyes at all. It was actually two pine cones that were sitting at the top of the tree that looked like eyes. Mm-hmm. So now everything's coming together, right? This whole thing was just a tree, not an alien being. And then the next thing in the picture that she saw, we saw these shadows that were in the shape of a flying saucer. One big giant shadow that looked like a saucer shape. Okay. So the chief investigator was investigating where the sun was positioned at that time, at that hour. And I was looking at— I got out there early because I wanted to see how the shadows passed out in front of this area. Mm-hmm. So what I found out is, and just like right now where I'm at, it's raining, and there's still some light out here, and I'm looking underneath the car, and I could see a shadow being cast. Mm-hmm. So no, you don't need to have bright sun out to cast the shadow.
Right.
Right. So anytime you see a car drive by, and it's raining out, you just look underneath and you'll see it looks darker. That's because the light that's hitting the top of the car, the car's blocking out that light.
Yeah, you're still going to have like enough to have like a shadow.
So what we figured, how she got that shadow that was shaped like that, all that was, it's because there was a whole group of trees and all lined up. And the way the sunlight hit it, it casted this shadow against this wall that made it look like a craft.
Just happened to be perfect. But we knew it wasn't a craft.
Yeah. And we knew there wasn't a craft because there wasn't anything identifying. No windows, no nuts or bolts or anything like that. That
I mean, it is interesting though, right? Like there's a lot of things like that we can kind of run into that we see that, again, you know, your brain can tell you that you see something that isn't actually there. Good that there are people who do go check that stuff out, because obviously if someone sees things like that, sometimes it'll freak them out, right? And so
she played upon her own fears.
Right.
So in this case, kind of
debunk those things a little bit for people.
Yeah, have to, because right away when I interviewed her, I know that she was scared. And here's the crazy thing. A lot of her fear came from what she claimed a long time ago, that she experienced a sighting that she didn't want to talk about. Okay. During the phone interview. Right. Mm-hmm. So could it have been something extraterrestrial perhaps, but I don't know, because she didn't want to talk about it. So maybe she really did see something a long time ago that was extraterrestrial nature. And because that happened, you know, fast forward many years after, you know, she's not no longer active in the military. So now, you know, she's just this.
Maybe it's a little
military with
a little person. More safe to talk about things like that. And so,
yeah, you know, she hears also, a dog barking and scared. And so she's feeling fearful and she has these fears and that fear just generated this whole thing of her thinking that, okay, well, it's an extraterrestrial saucer and it's a reptilian being and by the pond. So that's a good example of like, and that's why it was kind of a cool case to investigate, which shows you how even somebody high up in the military could, you know, a pilot,
absolutely. Everybody can have those experiences where you think you see something and your eyes are playing tricks on you. And yeah, you gotta be reasonable about it. Well, I do definitely want to be respectful of your time. And so I do want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of your experiences and the things that you do with ERC. So let the audience know if they do want to check you out or if they do want to go report something or send a case your way. Where do they go find you?
So anybody who wants to, you know, learn about the field of ufology, UFO subject matter, they can go to my website called ERC Extraterrestrial Research Center, and that could be found at www.ERC2explore.com. So ERC, ERC2explore.com, ERC2explore.com. And you can go to my website and you could watch videos and learn about different things there. And you could also, if you have a case that you want to submit, you can do that. Everything's all there. So yeah.
Awesome. And we'll definitely link that in the description below so people can go check it out too. So Rick Warner from Phantom Detectives and ERC, man wearing many hats. Thank you so much.
Too many hats.
Right. Don't worry. I know how that goes. I'm with you all the way. I have the same problem going on. Writer, podcaster, artist, all the
same. It was fun doing another show with you guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I appreciate you guys having me on. It seems like the time just flies right by, you know?
I know. Time flies when you're having fun. So we do appreciate you coming on and having some fun with us.
For sure.
Hey, that's great. Well, thanks again, both of you. Thank you for having me on. And I wish you guys a great rest of your evening and, you know, hope you guys get a lot more guests booked up.
Oh, yeah.
You as well.
Yeah, we're keeping busy. And we hope you keep busy with all your casework, too, and keep us posted when you find the really cool fun stuff.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Hey, thanks so much for listening, y'all. I've been Haley.
And I've been Johnny.
And this has been Johnny Haley, Day of Fun. Thanks so much for listening. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/JohnnyHaleyDOF, and we're JohnnyHaleyDOF on Instagram and @gmail.com. Send us your hate mail. We'll read it out loud on the podcast, won't we, Johnny?
For sure.
Awesome. Thanks for listening. Peace out, y'all.
Later.
Special thanks to the Parapost Network for the support of their community. Check out all the great podcasts on the Parapost Network on Facebook.